This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's now time for the property show on BFM 89.9 with me, Keith Kam. Malaysia has long-standing trade ties with Britain. We are talking investments of almost £8 billion as at last year. Sovereign investment firm Khazanah National even has an office in the Shard in London. That's on an overall investment level. As for property, Malaysian firms are no stranger to the real estate market in the UK. What immediately springs to mind is, of course, the Battersea Power Station project undertaken by SP Satya, Sime Darby and, of course, our Employees Provident Fund. Couple that with a weak pound, probably the only currency that is still relatively affordable against the ringgit, Malaysians are still keen to take up real estate investments in the UK. Today we are speaking with David Mizan Hashim, the President and Founding Director of the KL-based Veritas Design Group. We also have Peter Stocker, the Head of Veritas Office in London. These gentlemen will help guide us through the ins and outs of investing in Britain. Now, gentlemen, tell us first what Veritas does, the kinds of experiences that have led you to where you are today. David?
Yeah, Keith. Veritas began in Kuala Lumpur 30 years ago, primarily as an architectural practice. Over the 30 years, we've expanded to provide a number of complementary supporting services, like master planning, urban design, landscape design, interior design, quantity surveying, and environmental consulting. During that time also, we experienced an expansion beyond our own shores. I think it's part of my own DNA. I'm a rather globally minded person, and our international offices began to flourish. And that's led us to where we are today, because I've reached out to the UK, reconnecting with somebody who was there at the founding of Veritas, at the very founding of Veritas in our first year of existence in 1987. And Peter and I have been friends since then, even though he went back to the UK and had a very successful professional career. We've now reached out to each other to make the connection between Malaysia and the UK, and he's now become the principal leading our Veritas office in London.
So, Peter, tell us what you do.
Well, I also am an architect by training. Malaysia is not the only country that I've lived in other than UK and worked in. I've had a fairly global existence like David, and in returning to the UK wanted to continue to do that. The relationship between the two countries has always been strong, and it's become particularly important in the last few months, although that has been a coincidence rather than a driver.
No, Veritas, you guys are architects, so I suppose it's not quite a stretch of the imagination that you should get into property consultancy. But how did that happen?
Well, Keith, architecture is by its nature a property consultancy. And the more innovative architects have a role beyond just designing buildings. We actually can often put things together. Mm-hmm. We see an opportunity. We see a site opportunity. We see an investor who's interested to do something, and we, and basically put them together. We're not playing the role of real estate consultants. We just want to be involved in the architecture, but by helping things come together, we are at the first line. We are the first starting point when things get started, and we find as architects that having an earliest role as possible, start in the beginning of a project, means that you have the greatest degree of control of how it should end up. So we interact a lot with property developers. Mm-hmm. At yesterday's conference, which we helped organize, we brought together all the key players. We brought together developers. We brought together property consultants, landowners. We brought together legal advisors and real estate advisors all together as a way to debate the opportunities.
Now, Veritas has a presence in many other countries apart from Malaysia and Britain. We're talking about Vietnam, Australia, India, even Saudi Arabia. What sort of challenges do these different locations present?
Wow. You know, let me give some advice to Malaysians who are venturing overseas. It is no bed of roses. We are quite complacent here in Malaysia. The economy has, run pretty well here over the last few years. We've all done pretty well. But and we get used to the way things are done here in Malaysia. each country presents an entirely different set of challenges. And if you go in there, even if you're a successful Malaysian company, does not mean you're going to be successful globally. Mm-hmm. You need to have a certain perspective, a certain degree of openness to fresh new ideas. If you think you're an expert, then you're going to get killed. You have to go in there, you know, admitting that you're naive, admitting that you know little, and be willing to learn. And each of the countries that we've gone into, I've paid my tuition fees. Let me tell you, mm-hmm. The first few years in Vietnam were very difficult. And the other thing is that the cycles, the business cycles in different in countries are different. So a boom time in Australia might mean there's a recession time in Vietnam. So your strategies have to be different in working in different economic periods. So, and learning the culture and the people, it's entirely different. You can offend somebody in India without knowing it, because you greeted them in a way that you would greet your client in Melbourne, for example. And in India, they find that offensive. So it takes a certain understanding of particular culture.
In terms of building standards, though, are they vastly different between, you know, say, Malaysia and Vietnam or Saudi Arabia?
Not really. I mean, international standards have now crept into everywhere. Mm-hmm. The details can be different, but now the international world permeates the building industry. And at the top end of what we do, I mean, we don't do, say, affordable housing in Vietnam. But if we're doing high-end hotels, residential projects, office towers, the standards are pretty much the same.
And the response from investors?
Well, again, it depends on the market. But fortunately, most of the projects we've been involved in have been successful. And interestingly enough, they do involve Malaysian interests as well.
Now, a recent Knight Frank survey revealed that Malaysians make Singapore, Australia and the UK their top destinations for overseas homes. I suppose this is not a stretch of imagination as well. What do you think are the factors, you know, the investment returns, the ease of doing business in these countries, Peter?
Well, if I could pick up just on what David was saying about working overseas, the soft skills and the cultural factors are more difficult than the technical skills of working in that country. At yesterday's conference, there was quite a deep pessimism about the ability of Malaysians to get involved in this way because of those constraints, which I think were overblown to a certain extent. I mean, talent is global nowadays.
Yes,
you know, it's not the privilege of the few. The technology and the comms that we use, you know, are worldwide. Everybody has access to the same research, to the same things that are out there. The accreditation systems, which are those international norms, are increasingly global. So although for Malaysians, the building code has come out of British legal systems and former British systems and has a certain... both have a certain commonality, it means that the systems are working and that they are commonly understood. They're a common language. So for all of those reasons, I think we don't need to get too hung up about the idiosyncrasies of something which is different. And many of them were listed at the conference yesterday by the developers, talking of things which they just hadn't anticipated, which they wouldn't have occurred in Malaysia. But having fallen into the pit once, they're not going to do it again. As David says, they've paid their tuition fees. So why those three environments that you speak of are preferred by those looking to invest is they understand the rules, because the underlying base of the rules has come from a common source.
There's a familiarity there.
As well as other aspects like where their children are being educated, the returns that are out there in terms of property in UK because of the scarcity of land and the control of the supply of land for new housing, automatically pushing up the price. The same happens in Melbourne, the same is happening in Singapore, you know, as well.
Now, of late, there has also been an emergence of investments with the aim of leasing these units out as Airbnb-type accommodations. What are your thoughts on this? Good idea? Not?
This is a revolution. The sharing economy is disrupting all kinds of conventional business models. Airbnb is an interesting one. Certain cities, and you have to be careful, because certain cities are now instituting regulations against Airbnb-type operations. So, yet again, other cities which are more liberal, there are developments coming up which are designed for Airbnb-type operations. I mean, they're launched and sold, and the developers are promoting Airbnb investment models.
Right.
You know, yet in other cities, which are more conservative, Airbnb is actually outlawed, as we know. So I think the investors need to be very cautious. If it's an existing, an older, established residential arrangement, be careful, because you might think you're investing to Airbnb a unit, and guess what? You can't. You know, the residents have an association or a JMB, joint management body, will prevent you from doing that. So
always read the fine print.
Read the fine print. It's a great business model. And in fact, I've used it. I use it all the time because I travel with my family. But be careful, because a lot of places don't understand it yet. And the regulations haven't come in yet. And they will.
But in terms of the private rental sector and trying to get more capacity for the rental market, that's actually something which is being encouraged in the UK because of this lack of supply. There's a whole generation that cannot afford even to rent in London anymore. There's a whole group of really key workers that the city needs that can no longer afford to live in the city, and there has to be a way around that. What is the real sort of litmus paper problem at the moment is the perception that overseas investors are buying building stock and just leaving it empty. And it's the rage against the lack of local supply with empty properties, you know, just sitting there as gold bullion in the sky, as it's referred to, or buy to leave properties, as opposed to buy to do anything with them, that's a real issue and is being addressed politically. And the taxation system is likely to change to penalise, you know, properties being left empty. There's quite a radical review that the current British government is looking at to try and get around what is a huge national problem.
We are speaking with David Mizan Hashim, the President and Founding Director of Veritas Design Group, as well as Peter Stocker from Veritas UK. In a few moments, these gentlemen will share with us further insights into investing in real estate in the UK. BFM 89.9. This is The Property Show on BFM 89.9 with me, Keith Calm. We are talking to David Mizan Hashim, the President and Founding Director of Veritas Design Group, as well as Peter Stocker from Veritas UK. Now, Peter, taking the conversation a little bit further, do British people buy property, or are they more towards the rental type?
Historically, there's always been quite a high level of owner occupation. From the early 80s onwards, it was stimulated hugely by the government, whose agenda was to have a property owning democracy. And that was politically very successful. More recently, the ability to stimulate that further has become a significant intergenerational conflict point, as people of our generation, who as young professionals were able to invest at modest levels of income, bought their properties and have seen those grow hugely over the period, whereas, you know, our own children, who are in the same position, can't begin to get a foothold on the ladder. And if even the children of professionals are struggling, you know, the society has a problem with how it's providing basic accommodation for the next generation. And it's something we have to crack. I don't think the desire has gone away. Mm-hmm. It's just that the way that the market has developed has put us into this situation. Part of it is to do with the fact that we have become so much more globalised, and particularly London, but not exclusively London, has become a magnet for foreign investment. The demand to own property has gone up hugely. The wealth of the people who are competing for it is much higher, and the if you like, the local population has been squeezed out of the market. It's a big problem.
Now, investing in the UK, what are the attractions for foreigners?
Well, I mean, basically, they just look at the not just the historic returns, but the current returns. You know, it, particularly in a world market where inflation is low, and currently, you know, that the value of the pound is weak.
You did say that property prices are at fairly lofty levels now. What is the point of getting into the market now if your chances of getting a return on your investments are not that high?
The returns are still good. It's just the entry, getting onto the bottom rung of the ladder relative to multiples of as a multiple of people's earnings and salary is just so enormous now.
What are the potential risks and pitfalls that only an insider like yourself can provide towards investing in the UK?
I think the fundamentals of the lack of supply are being pursued by the government. They are leaning very heavily on the local authorities who have supplies of land which are not so dominated by the market price of buying and selling over the last 2 decades, sometimes underutilized. Other sort of quasi-governmental or state agencies also have quite a lot of land. They're trying to unlock that to increase the supply. At the same, so that's very positive. At the same time, they're looking to penalize or disincentivize people from just buying property as an investment and just leaving it there.
To flip it over, you mean?
Oh, well, to flip it, but just to leave it. Just to leave it and say, here's an asset just sitting there doing very, very nicely for me. You know, often preferring not to seek to get a rental income from it, to just leave it empty because it's just not worth the hassle of doing it. And that's criminal in a city which has a huge problem of homelessness and people being unable to find property. So the biggest risk perhaps is political, that the disincentives have already started with the rise in stamp duty for very, very wealthy properties. Then there's been a reduction in demand, a reduction in the rate of growth of prices at the top end of the market, which is not replicated elsewhere. And that policy agenda is likely to continue.
Which might have been one of the factors that led to the whole Brexit sentiment. I suppose this development, Brexit, how would it affect the current property market right now?
The uncertainties of what might be happening and what policy is delivering a number of sort of short-term shocks into the economy. But unless the fundamentals change, the value of property and the cost of property is unlikely to go down. It will slow, but if the fundamentals are still driving it up, it'll keep on going up.
People investing into the UK property market didn't do it because UK was part of the EU. It had nothing to do with their decision. And therefore, the fact that the UK will not be part of the EU will not affect their decision. I was told that if all the square footage of companies that said they were going to leave London are added together, it wouldn't even come up to 5% of the annual uptake in office space. It would be a blip. It would be a blip that would be absorbed without even noticing. So I think I don't think that's going to be a factor. I'm very convinced by that.
For existing investors in the UK and in Britain's property real estate market, what would your advice? What would you like from them?
The British government has set out its stall now, saying where it wants to encourage investment. It's effectively said to investors, you know, that the not only is the market for high-end properties in the centre of London completely saturated at the moment, with a huge amount of a huge amount still in the pipeline for which the demand has dropped. Those aren't its priorities. You know, its priorities are housing for people who live and work in its major cities, particularly those cities which are not London, because a lot of young people are actually leaving London for the reason that they can't get anywhere to live, and Birmingham particularly is growing well, Bristol is doing very well, Leeds is doing very well. All the secondary cities which have an attractive environment and good working environment are doing well as a consequence at the moment. They want to help with that. They want help with development which is related to infrastructure, as well as the infrastructure itself. And Malaysian investors are starting to being encouraged to look at that and looking at the returns on that as well. There are sort of other sectors where funding that was previously available because of Brexit is liable to dry up. So there's an enormous pressure on the tertiary education sector to improve its stock of buildings, to create buildings which respond to the new ways of teaching and learning, and are looking for a market share at the expense of their rivals. There's a huge research agenda which is going to have lost its primary funding source, and all of those things are, you know, have good and measurable returns. In the health sector, the emergence of primary care big GP surgeries, one of the most attractive asset classes in terms of returns over the last 5 years, that's got no other source of funding with the constraints of the NHS. Quite how more private sector investment into even tertiary care is going to be done with the huge difficulties that the PFI regime got itself into, which has effectively almost bankrupted a number of major trusts. So there are lots and lots of areas where they want to encourage investment, and where following where other skills could follow in the wake of Malaysian finance.
Now, Prime Minister Theresa May, she's also announced that elections will be held 3 years earlier in June 2017. This development, of course, has caused the pound to spike, but that's more like a knee-jerk reaction. What are your thoughts on its long-term implications?
She's explained clearly why she thinks she needs to do it, given that up until now she said she was going to honour the fixed term of Parliament and didn't see a need to disrupt it. And there are, you know, strong political arguments for doing that. If, as may well be the case, she is returned with a larger mandate through this election process, there will be much greater certainty about the direction of travel of all sorts of things in UK, which should reassure investors because they know where the UK is heading. So although it's another one of these sort of twists and turns which in the short term spooks investors, I think in the long term it may well provide a much firmer platform for investment decisions over the longer term.
We have been chatting with David Mizan Hashim, the President and Founding Director of Veritas Design Group, as well as Peter Stocker from Veritas UK. Now, before we wrap up, here is a quick property tip. Most financial institutions offer two types of home loans. A traditional fixed-term loan requires you to pay a fixed amount each month for its entire tenure. A flexi-loan gives you the option of reducing your interest whenever you wish. If you have a strict and predictable cash flow pattern, a traditional term loan may be best. If you prefer flexibility in paying off your loan as and when you can, then a flexi loan is recommended. Consult your favorite bank to know your options. Now, if you've missed any part of this program, download the BFM app on both Google Play and the App Store. That's all for this week's The Property Show. Join us again next week, Friday, after the 9:30 a.m. news for more. I'm Keith Kam for BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.